Welcome to episode 308 of the Rugby League Republic podcast with your hosts,
Tish
and Dr. T. In this episode, we discuss the Sharks, David Fifita, Magic Round, and much more. Join us as we build a rugby league community for all. The Rugby League Republic podcast starts right now. Welcome to episode 308 of the Rugby League Republic podcast. We aim to bring you the everyday fan's perspective on the greatest game of all, rugby league. This is Rugby League for the people. I am your co-host, Dr. T. Joining me is Tish. Tish, how are you going this week?
Dr. T, I'm doing well, to be honest. I haven't been out of the house. Too scared I might break a hamstring or a pec and go down. Like all the New South Wales players seem to be going down. But look, yeah, apart from fearing the worst, I'm doing okay, and Magic Round, we're already here. It's like a third of the season was already gone. Can you believe it?
Yeah, well, exactly. And you know what happens at the end of the third of the season? It's the Origin time, and that's why there's all this talk about Origin. Look, as you said, I think it's fair to say if you are born in New South Wales and play rugby league, you are an endangered species. You are in trouble. You are at high risk at the moment, red alert. If you're born in New South Wales, play rugby league, and you're a man in particular, I think there's a danger there. Exceptions are Greg Inglis. Any other Queenslanders that stole were stolen from New South Wales, it's a crazy time of year. But look, it's almost like a mini season has already been undertaken, and it culminated very recently with a top of the table clash, which we'll talk about, no doubt. But yeah. Is there anything else? Origin is starting to definitely, there's a lot more Origin talk at the moment. So you kind of know that Origin season is upon us. And as we know, those of you who listen to us know that it is the second act of a four acts, where the fourth one is the final series. It's, you know, we've just passed the first act. We're just about to enter Origin season. That's act two. Act three is going to be the run home to the finals after Origin, post-Origin, and then the finals themselves is the fourth act. So, you know, this is the great Shakespearean tragedy of rugby league. This is the structure. And, we're about to head into it. But before we do that, let's jump into tackle number one, where we're going to review round 10 of the NRL. Here goes.
Oh, sorry, wrong music, guys. Here, set. All right, it's a long season. Yeah, here we go.
That's more like it. Round 10 review of the NRL. We started off on Thursday evening with the Dolphins defeating Manly 30-24 at home at Suncorp Stadium in front of a pretty small 14,000 or so crowd. That was followed up on Friday by two big blockbuster matches. The Panthers 16-10 over the Bulldogs at Bluebet Stadium in front of a bumper 21,000 crowd there. And the 8 p.m. game saw the Eels capitulate yet again, 30-14 at the hands of the Brisbane Broncos at home, though, at CommBank Stadium, in front of a pretty healthy 17 or so thousand there. Then Saturday, the triple header, or the Super Saturday, as they call it, started off with the Knights 20-14 over the Tigers. I think that was at Tamworth in Scully Park. So well done, the Knights there. Then we saw at Netstrata Jubilee Stadium, the Dragons 28-14 winning over the South Sydney Rabbitohs. And then, look, probably the match of the round, in my view, was the top-of-the-table clash between the Sharks and the Storm. And just as I predicted, the Sharks defeating the Storm 25-18, despite the fact they didn't have Nico Hines at all on the field, which is a real testament to their his replacement, but also just the team in as a whole as well. The Roosters 38-18 over the Warriors in the first Sunday 2 p.m. clash at Allianz Stadium. And finally, Gold Coast Titans 20-18 victors over the North Queensland Cowboys at Cbus Super Stadium. And Canberra had the bye. So, look, let's start off with the obvious one. Tish, Storm and Sharks for mine was match of the round. Do you agree with that? Do you want to... do you want to challenge that? What were you? Let's just focus on that. Do you agree it was a match around? And what do you think was the reason why the Sharks won this one?
Yeah, look, I definitely think it was a match and around, and you know, I think it's very significant this result because this has been the criticism for the Sharks for the last few years that they've been a very good side. They've been sort of, you know, in the top eight, you know, sort of even pushing in towards top four. But what they can't do is beat the other big teams that are in the eight. But now they've done it. They've beat Melbourne, who were sitting, I think, sitting with them right on the top of the ladder, and they've been able to do it. So I think, you know, full credit to them. How they did it, I think they just, to be honest, I think they just went with them as much as they could, right? They sort of hung in there. I think, you know, they've got to be commended for their goal line defense to hold, you know, the Storm down to, you know, only three tries sort of thing. And, yeah, and I think, like, you know, that last try from Talakai, I mean, that was like almost length of the field type performance. So I think just being able to stick with it, you know, was kind of big for them. You know, their goal kicking was great. I mean, 4 out of 4 for Daniel Atkinson. But really, yeah, I think a great performance. So, yeah, definitely that. I mean, you know, I suppose honourable mention goes to the Gold Coast Titans Cowboys game where, you know, there was a late scare. The Titans deserved to win, but somehow the Warriors came back. Oh, sorry, the Cowboys came back all the way to the end. So I think that was definitely probably a contender, but definitely a very significant game. And, you know, probably, you know, Sharks, are they a real premiership threat? Maybe after this performance, you'd say maybe.
Yeah, look, I think you're right. Look, one of the, you know, the monkeys off their back now, the idea that they can't beat the top teams. Well, they've been in Melbourne Storm at home with virtually, yes, Papenhuyzen's been injured, but when has he not been injured in the last 2 years? Munster was there. All the other key players were there, as far as I can tell. And they didn't even have Nico Hines, who's their star player. Mm. And so you put all that together and you think, well done to, is it Craig Fitzgibbon, who's their coach, you know, who has really matured, I think, as a first head coach in the NRL. This is a first step, I think, towards his future career, and I think it's a good step. And let's see what happens. Let's see if they can build on that. I think I had the Sharks you know, making the grand final this year, I believe, in my crystal ball prediction. I've got to double check that, but pretty sure I did. And I think they're looking the goods because, they definitely are showing. Look, they're top of the table, clear top of the table at the moment. So what I predicted was, I've just had a look, Warriors and Sharks. And Warriors in the grand final, and Warriors to win. So, look, at least half of my prediction seems to be on track. Maybe not the other one, but I think Cronulla, the defense is really what gets you over the line against the Storm. I think you've got to. There is no way you can defeat the Storm without rock solid defense, and I think they had absolutely brilliant defense. There was some controversy though out of that game. Around, I forget the name of the player. Is it
Harry Grant?
Harry Grant. Yeah, that's right. He got sin binned and put on report for touching the Cronulla kicker, whose name escapes me now. Is it? I forget who it was. You remember?
I think it was Atkinson from memory.
Atkinson, what's his first name? Anyway,
Grant. Sorry.
Grant, okay, yeah, let's find out in a minute.
Okay, is that a referee? Anyway, Daniel Atkinson.
There you go. And so I guess I want to just sort of quickly raise that Daniel Atkinson, that's right, who actually was a mean goal kicker as well and actually scored a 73rd minute field goal to put them ahead. They did go in 12 all at halftime, so it was kind of neck and neck the whole way. But it was really that field goal sort of showed, look, what a pressure situation for a young player who, came in as a replacement. But there you go. That's an excellent sign. I think that the replacement player, so to speak, has come in and maturely got them over the line against, he was up against Cameron Munster, and you can't go wrong with that. When you perform like that, that's a very good sign. What do you think about the Harry Grant situation? He did connect with his foot while he was still in the air. I think strictly by the letter of the law, he did. It was at least a penalty. I've seen bins like that not being given. It didn't look like it was intentional. It looked like Harry Grant wasn't looking at all, but you can't deny it. He connected with him while he was still in the air. And a lot of people have gone at Daniel Atkinson saying he's a bit of a soccer diver, making a big mountain out of a molehill. But I don't know. Like, I've never been in an NRL game where someone like a Harry Grant has knocked my foot whilst I'm in the air and I've just kicked the ball. I mean, I would think that he's could have, who knows, that could have really jarred his ankle. I wonder whether people acknowledge that there's some truth to that. But, people are jumping on him saying that it was a bit fake. But I don't know what you think about that, Tish. What are your thoughts on that situation?
Yeah, I thought penalty but not sin bin is probably where I lie on it, because what I could say in Harry's defence is that I did feel like he, I think he even showed it, he was kind of... he was kind of not even looking at the he wasn't even looking like you could like he, his body was turned around when he made connection, that he wasn't even looking at him to the point where he was trying to pull out. And it was just he pulled out too late, but the impact wasn't great. So I think just the fact that there wasn't a massive impact is probably enough for it not to be a sin bin, because he did do a radio interview, and I kind of agree with him in that, like, if it's going to be a sin bin like that, then the risk versus reward ratio changes to the point where it doesn't make sense for anybody to put pressure on a kicker. And if you don't put pressure on kickers in the NRL, I mean, it's going to be really hard to try and defend against kicks. Right. So, part of putting pressure on the kicker is that you've got to, it is something that's in the game where, it's an effort play, and it just allows you it's a tactic that goes away. So how else are you going to do it? On the reverse side of that, though, the kind of argument is, I think about a player like Kikau, right, who he seems to be able to put lots of pressure on kicks, but yet he doesn't get penalised because he never takes the kicker out, or touches the kicker. So, are we saying, you've got to forcefully touch the kicker for a sin bin versus a light touch? Who determines what a light touch is? I don't know. But I just think that in this one, it didn't look like a really serious touch. So that's why I think it could have just been a penalty. But, yeah, it's going to be very hard to determine, though, if you go down this thing, where does serious become? Because you have the, I think this one was really light. You might have one that's really heavy, but the one in the middle is going to be the difficult one to adjudicate on, right?
That's true. Mm. That's true.
And you might as well just send them all off. So just send them all off. Stop the game, I think.
Yeah. I mean, look, I wonder whether, that argument, we may as well, let's go to the extreme. If any touch is going to be sin bin, therefore it's going to discourage anyone from doing charge downs or whatever. And it's like, no, I think it's kind of, I mean, I think it's like it's about the fact that he hit his leg, and what it may encourage people is to actually look where they're going. So, like, I mean, Harry wasn't looking, and to me, that's akin to kind of arguing, you know, when you've given a head high tackle. Oh no, his intent wasn't there because he was looking away. It's like, that's not good enough. You have to look at what you're doing. You know, that doesn't change the fact that you've created contact. So I get it. I get that why there's a bit of controversy, but at the same time, I think, well, you know, the rules are there for a reason, and I don't think the argument against it is strong enough. I think you should have just watched where he was going. And to be honest, why would he be looking at where the ball's going? Like, his job is to tackle the kicker and stop him or put pressure on him. Why does he care where it lands? Like, it's, you know, why are you looking when it goes sky high? That makes no sense to me. So I kind of think he's been a bit shifty, and he's actually saying, and maybe they're coached this way, to kind of go in and look away, because that way, if you do create contact, you can argue that it wasn't your fault and was not intentional. I think it's almost deliberate when they're trained that way. Because that certainly doesn't happen. That's not old school, is it? That's not the old school way of charging down, that where you 100% focus on getting to the ball and sticking your arms out. You didn't even do that, as far as I'm concerned. So, you know, it wasn't textbook at all, which kind of makes me think it was, you know, his job was to just put pressure, and yes, it was accidental, but it is what it is. I mean, we're seeing some situations like that as well, where players catch the ball and they're touched mid-air and they kind of go off balance, and it still counts as a tackle if you kind of knock someone down when they're up in the air. And they're coming down dangerously. There's a reason why it's a penalty, and that's why. So anyway, look, regardless of that, let's unless you have any other ones that you want to talk about, Tish, otherwise we'll move on to tackle number two.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, here we go. All right, tackle number two is about David Fifita's future. During last week, there was a lot of speculation around, would he be a Rooster? Is he a Panther? Is he going to be a Rooster, or is he a Panther? The answer is he's a Rooster. After all that, it ended up at the Roosters. A lot of people obviously whinging about, oh, here we go again, the Roosters buying up all the available talent. Let's not forget they've lost. Both teams actually have lost quite a lot of players and have some money to spare under the cap. So I don't begrudge them at all looking for, you know, they've lost Suali, they've lost, is it Waria Hargraves is retiring, or I don't know, who else are they losing? And so it kind of makes sense, I think, that there is some money to spare. But the question now is, well, a couple of things. First of all, why do you think Fifita chose the Roosters over the Panthers? So, you know, the argument, I think, was that for the Panthers is this is a team that has a really good system and a really good structure. It's been proven. They've won three in a row. It's unprecedented. They may even be one of the favourites to win this year. To make it four would be unbelievable. Why would you choose a Roosters team that hasn't won for, well, 5 years or so? They did win the double in 18-19, I think. Why would you choose the Roosters, which themselves are going through a bit of a rebuild phase, over the Panthers that have a proven system in the last couple of years? Or admittedly, though, they have lost some major players in the last couple of years, and will continue to do so. What are your thoughts, Tish? Why would you, if you were Fifita, what were your reasons for choosing Roosters over the Panthers?
Yeah, well, look, Penrith this year opened up Bondi Beach to compete with Bondi Beach, right? So I know we've all made many reasons for it, but, you know, David Fifita lives on the Gold Coast, ladies and gentlemen, right? And I think, you know, moving to Sydney, you know, from probably people in Queensland think, you know, this is like, you know, the Great South, you know, the, you know, it's like, it's going to be snowing, right, in Sydney. That's probably how Queenslanders might view, you know, making the shift down south. So he's probably thinking, you know what, like, where I live and where, like, if do I live near a Penrith location or live near a Bondi location? And I think maybe that could also be part of the decision too. I mean, we've given the footy reasons and things like that, but, you know, the reality is, you know, I think there's more to it than just the footy side of it, right? So I think potentially those factors, because he's not said anything about why he's made the move, but I think, and he probably won't say the lifestyle reasons, but I think that has a big part to do with it. I mean, the only other thing I can think of is that, you know, if you actually look at the squad at the Gold Coast at the moment, Sam Verrills is a former Rooster. Maybe Sam was like, you know, maybe him and Sam are great buddies or something. And they sat down and like, oh, tell me, you know, how's it like living in Bondi? And he's like, oh, it's great, man. You don't want to live in Penrith, that type of thing. I don't know if it's something like that, right, that's happened. But I think this is why Penrith went with this strategy of building their own juniors a little bit, because they kind of know that they have to develop players that are passionate about the area and about representing the Panthers jersey, not just there to sort of win a medal, right?
Yeah,
they kind of had that with Panglai Jr. a little bit, right? But then I think in the end, he didn't have that much game time in the grand final that he played as well, right? So I think from the Panthers' point of view, I think they want some people who have a bit more of a pride for the jersey. But I think with the Roosters have got the system and they kind of can believe that when people go to the Roosters, they don't want to leave. So that's probably why that makes it a stronger point. So, yeah, look, I'm not too sure why he's left, but I think that what could be a major factor is just the lifestyle. I think he feels that the lifestyle at the Roosters is more akin to what he's used to.
Yeah, look, you know, obviously Bondi is the Gold Coast of New South Wales. Obviously, that's this is what you're saying, you know. But yeah, that's a lot of interesting reasons I think that we could give. But the other thing that's happened is now that the fallout occurs, now that there's a discussion about, well, what does this mean for Angus Crichton, who is. You know, I don't know why it's come up, because surely there are other players that might be under pressure as well. But for some reason, there's been a focus on, well, where does this leave Angus Crichton? He's actually come out and says, and I think he's actually maybe publicly stated he's a bit upset about what's happened, which is a bit kind of unusual. But there you go. So some people have weighed in on the discussion. Mm. You know, we love Angus. He's a great, you know, player in our team, this, that, the other. I don't know what that – I mean, surely there are 2 second rowers. I don't know why. Isn't there a third one? Or I don't know. Mm. Like I would say a second row with both Fifita and Crichton would be amazing. And I don't know what the issue is necessarily. Maybe I don't know enough about the squad. Maybe there's something about the squad that is there another player there that should take precedence over Angus Crichton? I'm not really sure, because I would think that so if I'm looking at who they've got there, we've got Crichton at second row, they've got Egan Butcher at second row, they've got look, the others I think are playing mostly props. So Spencer Lenu, Lindsay Collins, they're usually props, they're not really second rowers. Going down, I'm looking at – no, look, I can't really see anyone else that is better than Crichton at the moment at second row. And so to bring in Fifita, assuming that he is primarily a second row, and I think that's the way he normally plays there at the Titans, you know, what does that mean? You know, I don't know. I mean, I think you can have both of them, can't you? Like what's the – so yeah. I guess I'm asking you, is there – are you buying into this, Crichton is being pushed out sort of facade, or is it a real issue? And in which case, where do you land on yay or nay, Crichton stay or go?
Well, I think the reason why Crichton might be a bit upset is because he is, I think he's coming off contract, right? So he's trying to get his renewal, and he's been playing well, like, that's the thing. So, and he might even get a spot in Origin, which I think he's had that sort of form. He's been a great player, and I think, but you know, the interesting thing is when you look at, you know, Angus Crichton as a second rower, and then as you mentioned some of the other names, you know, they're all good players, but what they're not, and which David Fifita is a strike second rower, right? Somebody who actually can get over the line and score some tries and, you know, probably push into the centres if you needed to, sort of thing. So a bit more versatility, right? If you look at players like, you know, Tupanua and, you know, C.O.R. Wong, that, you know, Nat Butcher, who also plays lock, and, you know, Victor Radley plays lock. You know, they're all sort of the same sort of ball-playing second rower, you know, back rower type players who can probably, you know, chime in the back line, put a little holes in, but are they going to get over the line, score some tries? Are they going to make a devastating run? That, you know, they'll probably make a really fast long run and a quick play the ball type thing. They'll probably work hard for you, do 50 tackles and not miss any. They'll probably, you know, you know, be really solid in sort of defense, but do they get any attack out of them like a David Fifita would, right? Like a Jeremiah Nenai. There's players, there's that type of second roller which the Roosters don't have. So I think it's more of a, you know, this is the chess piece a little bit. You know, it's a rook or something like that that Trent Robinson doesn't have right at the moment, which I think he needs to get. So I don't think Angus needs to worry, because I think his role in the team, playing second row, would be there, like that role that he plays, it'd still be a role for him. I suppose the challenge for him is that there's probably, is that there's one more second role to compete with in terms of getting into the 17. So, yeah, but I'm sure that also, like, you know, Angus Crichton, I think he could probably get a really good deal elsewhere as well. But maybe he just doesn't want to leave the Roosters. Maybe, you know, maybe he himself has caught up into the Bondi lifestyle.
Yeah, look, once you go to Coogee, once you go to Icebergs, it's hard to leave, isn't it?
that's right.
And Bondi. But, yeah, look, who knows? I think I'm not buying into this. I think you're right. Maybe it is contract negotiation time, and it's just about who getting on the media radar and making sure that others are, you know, there to, you know, distract, I guess, from the real reason why you're bringing it up. Look. But it is what it is. Let's see what happens. But anyway, that's the big news this week in recruitment-wise. We are now going to go into our Rugby League Republic rolling report card in tackle number 3. We're going to talk about the Warriors. Here we go. All right, so in this segment, we focus on one club and give our report card on how they're traveling so far this year. So far, we've looked at the Eels, Dolphins, Raiders, Sharks, Seagulls, and Bulldogs, and we are now going to stop and look at the Warriors. So, look, let me bring up some stats while we're talking. We've got the Warriors in terms of attack. Let me have a look. That's the first sort of criteria that we usually look at. In terms of attack, they are they're going okay, I guess. 194 points scored. I don't know how could you say okay. They're probably middle of the road, I would say, based on what I'm looking at in terms of all the other teams. Where they're really, so I would say, look, you know, you can't really talk about attack without talking about defense, but if you're just looking at numbers, they're at -9 at the moment, so they've obviously let in more points than they have scored. I think this year I've noticed that they're a bit flatter in attack than they have been, you know, like last year. Obviously, we were right in the wave of the up the Waz, and this year they're kind of not really going there. They've only won 3 out of the 9 games that they've – sorry, 10 games that they've played. And drawn 1. So, you know, 6 losses, 3 wins. It's not really good this year, and there's something to do with their attack, I think. Last year they were very exciting. This year DWZ is still scoring some of those great goals, great tries on the sideline with his athleticism. But there's equally, I think, lots of you know, bunker decisions to overturn those tries. So, you know, that flashy kind of thing isn't really working at the moment. I feel like they're also a bit more one-dimensional than they were last year in attack. And so I guess that kind of also doesn't bode well for them. But Tish, what about you? If you were to give a rating for attack for the Warriors this year, what would you give them?
Yeah, look, I am going to go D. Right. I know that's a bit harsh, but I just think that for their attack, to have not scored 200 points, and plus they've played all 10 games, right? So, you know, the Roosters have played 10, you know, the Broncos have played 10, and, yeah, they're the only, and, yeah, who else has played 10? And then a few of the other teams, yeah, the Cowboys have played 10. Yeah, so there's teams who played 10 games already scored above 240, like above 200 points, right? So that's above 20 points a game. They're averaging what, like sort of 19 points a game, so a little bit under. And I feel like that's probably not good enough for a team like that who seems to be more attack-focused than defense-focused. You know, so I just think that's that. It was kind of a feature of their season last year, right? I think both attack and defense, they were doing much better this time last year. So I feel like, you know, let's be honest, they're underperforming. You know, part of this rolling report card is to figure out why. And I think they've just been, they've scored some great tries, but they've just haven't been able to put an 80-minute attacking performance together this year to actually get them those wins.
And yeah, so the, just on that, look, a team that has in the back line DWZ, Roger Tuivasa-Sheck, Sean Johnson, Charles Nickel Klogstad, you know, a team that has those four players in the back line to be struggling, to me suggests that, yeah, a lot of this is the one-dimensional, I think, nature. And Tamari Martin is there supporting Sean Johnson, but I wonder whether that's enough. I think they're kind of, there's something about they're not really coming together. Luke Metcalf as well is possibly there, but they're not really coming together. So I don't know what they're missing necessarily, but it's clear that their attack. Look, I'd have to go. I don't know if D is too harsh, but I'll go with you on that one. D. If we go with defense, speaking of D, their defense is not very good either. They've conceded 203 points. You know, they are how many teams are above? Well, actually, no. There's actually some teams in the top eight that actually have done worse than them. They've conceded only one less point than the Raiders that are coming seventh at the moment, and the Raiders are negative 14. So they've actually got a better for and against than the Raiders, and yet the Raiders are on 12 points and they're only on seven. So I think part of that is if you look at their kind of, and this goes to momentum as well, if you look at their recent history and how they started, they had quick losses to Sharks and the Storm, who are now top of the table. They then beat the Raiders and the Knights and the Rabbitohs. They drew against the Seagulls, and then since then, it is 1, 2, 3, 4 losses, possibly a fifth one with the Panthers. So they've lost 4 in a row since that draw with the Manly Warringah Seagulls. So, and look, some of them have been close, but some of them have been blowouts. They were flogged by the Dragons, recently flogged by the Roosters, but close ones against the Knights and the Titans. So defense-wise, I think it's clear that, you know, they're doing okay. So I would give them for that maybe a C because they're not that terrible. And there are other teams way above them that have a similar record to them. But if I'm moving to momentum as our other criteria, I think at the moment it's a definite D. 4 losses in a row when your draw is... let me go through that again. Dragons, Titans, Knights, and Roosters, and you've lost all 4 of those games. That is not boding well for momentum. And I think, look, I don't know what happened. It might have been something around the time of the Seagulls game, but they were going pretty good at that point. You know, not terribly, but, you know, keeping pace with the leaders. Not anymore. I think they're dropping majorly. So I don't. And, you know, after this week, they've got the Panthers. this weekend. I don't know what that means in Magic Round. That maybe they need to really bring their magic, but it's going to be hard against the Panthers, who are always lift for these occasions. So momentum, I would say D. Let's just move on to the next one, which is depth. Having a look at their squad, Tish, I think, like I said, there's four players or so that in the back line, could step up a little bit, but no one really to take over if they need to be replaced. No one of note anyway that could take that forward. In the forwards, though, they do have some strong players and, capability to switch things up. They've got players like, Dylan Walker, who plays a really positive kind of ball playing lock role. You've got Fenua Blake, Freddie Lussick is there as well, Jazz Tavaga, Kurt Capewell is there, let's not forget, in the second row. Nia Corey is there, and Tohu Harris, of course, at lock. So, look, they've got lots of depth, I think, not super amount of depth, but definitely in the backs is where the issue is. So I would say, unless you disagree, that depth, I think, is a C. They've got okay depth across the board, but forwards a bit more than the backs. What do you think, Tish, about any of those ones?
Yeah, look, I agree with you for C for the depth. I'm not sure, only because, like, I actually don't know who their feeder club is, and they don't have a New South Wales team in the New South Wales Cup team. So it must be Queensland Cup. So I think it's a little murky where they're going to get their replacement players from to begin with, right? So I think that's a bit of a I think that's where, who is the feeder club? We don't really know, right, who the feeder team is. So
I can look for it.
So I think from that point of view, it looks like that, how are they going to cover Rashawn Johnson, for example? How are they going to cover, they've got a bit of fullbacks, but what about their forwards and things like that? And so I think from that point of view, it's definitely there. I think you're right with the D as well on the when it comes to momentum. I suppose if you include the draw, they haven't won a game since they beat South, which was like over 6 weeks ago. So five straight losses plus a draw, not really a good sign here for the Warriors at all, right? A lot needs to be turned around, and what do you know, they've got the Panthers this week, so hopefully so difficult times ahead, but look, I still think that they have got a chance, right? They've just got to, get a couple of wins under their belt and just turn it around that way. Maybe they're just lacking confidence a little bit, but I can understand why Warriors fans will be feeling very nervous just based on their recent results.
And just to answer your question, they do have a standalone reserves team in the New South Wales Cup, so they do have a Warriors team in the New South Wales Cup. I'm not necessarily sure how they're going, but I would think that if you just look at their top squad, they do have some struggles ahead. If we go to the next, look, we're talking about strengths and weaknesses now before we give our overall grade. Tish, let's just roll through. What are some of the strengths of the Warriors? I think Sean Johnson is really strong. The home crowd is a very strong thing. I think Webster is a benefit to them. I think even though he's young, I think he's pretty intelligent as a coach. I think they've also got, attacking philosophy, I think, is something that is a positive. It is one of their strengths. And they got, look, athleticism, e.g. DWZ. They've got players that can run, they're fast, they can score tries, out of nothing, like DWZ. That's a benefit. I think to have that means that you can create some momentum within games, and other teams who don't have that strike power can't do that. Weaknesses, I think depth is a weakness. I think inexperience of coach is a weakness. I think He's intelligent, but he's inexperienced. So I wonder. That's you know, it's a double-edged sword, I think. And I think, oh, I should go back to strengths. I think their forwards are a strength. They do have a very strong forward pack. If I go back to their weaknesses, I think one-dimensional attack. So they have an attacking philosophy, but they don't. They rely too much on Sean Johnson. So let me just say that reliance on Sean Johnson is probably the key thing. And look, I think one of the other kind of drawbacks I think that they have is that some star players, e.g. RTS, Roger Tuivasa-Sheck, not performing at the moment. I think that's another thing that they're struggling with, is they've got some star players. They don't have much depth in those backline positions, and they're not even performing, you know, to the level that they were last year. So I feel like they're stifled somehow, and there's something that needs to be unleashed in them, and it's not really working at the moment. And I think you've seen that in, you know, four losses in a row to very mild, well, apart from the Roosters that are on a rampage at the moment, but the other teams were definitely beatable, and certainly you would expect the Warriors of this year, let alone one of last year, to beat those teams, and it's not been the case. So I think whatever's happening, I don't know. I think it's a mental thing. I think someone's pointed out that since Fenua Blake indicated he was leaving, that there would be that they've sort of dropped off a bit. Maybe there's something wrong in the dressing room. Maybe there's the camaraderie is not there anymore because of some of these toings and goings, and maybe that's caused issues. But look, overall, I would say their grade is C at the moment. I think they had some good elements early on, and they've just absolutely lost the plot more recently. So they're not going well at the moment. But I agree with what you said earlier. I think there is definitely ample opportunity and time to turn this around. And you know, they're only a couple of wins outside of the top eight, as most teams are really. So I think it is early stages. It's the first act of the NRL's season, and I think there's opportunities for them to improve. But I think for now, my judgment is a C. What do you think, Tish? Do you agree with that?
No, look, I think for the team they are, I'm going to rank them as a D. I think for the squad they've had, where they finished up last year, I think they've improved their squad as well. They're definitely not at their best. And I think one of their weaknesses at the moment is losing a bit of focus, like sort of daydreaming in games. Because I think they're one of the teams where if you actually watch a lot of their games out, they'll normally score early. They'll like usually post points first, but then they'll sort of take the foot off the pedal, you know, they'll like just lose focus on the game and what's important. You know, they might, you could see them not try to straighten up the bench when they're sitting back down, right? Like, it's like, that's not important, man. You got to go out there and play, you know, like, you know, I'm holding up the card the wrong way. And, you know, just sort of lose sight of the big picture or something like that during games, I feel, because, like, they just sort of, try to do the crazy pass, you know, 10 metres out from their line, drop the ball, and, you know, so just that attention to detail, lack of focus, is those key areas. And, you know, those are things that you are really just sort of mindfulness and effort stuff rather than actual skill. So I think on the skill, they're definitely a top-class skill team, but I think they're close to a D for me just because of the fact that they're not performing.
All right, we'll leave it there. Let's move on to the biggest news now in Origin at the moment is what the Blues going to do with their halfback. Tackle number four, here we go. Well, Nathan Cleary in last week's game against the Bulldogs re-injured his leg, I think it was, and looks like he's out of action for a while. This means that we in New South Wales, State of Origin, have to go back to the drawing board. We have to assume that we're not going to have Nathan Cleary at all throughout the season, throughout that series. And so we need to look for a backup. We need to look for someone. And look, at the moment, the fact that Cleary's not there calls into question as well whether Luai can be considered a favourite for the 5-8 position. Lots of names have been drawn up. One of the key kind of names that have been coming up and possible, possible combinations is Nicho Hynes and Mitchell Moses. So Nicho probably at 5-8, Moses at halfback. Let's not forget Moses is himself injured and has missed most of the season so far, and he's only just coming back from injury and won't really have much more than a game or two before they select the squad. Nicho Hynes missed out last week's top of the table clash against the Storm. So he himself is kind of has been injured, is prone to injury a little bit. Nicho and Moses, both of them are kind of untested or, haven't really dominated at that level. So it's a question mark whether we bring them back. What do we do? What other options are available? Do we resurrect Andrew Johns, Peter Sterling? How far back do we go to solve this halfback headache that the Blues have? Tish, what are your views?
Well, do we know that Moses is out for the whole series? Because I think there is
Cleary, you mean?
Book that he could come back halfway through, right? And then Nicho Hynes, okay, he didn't play that game against Melbourne, but he's had a bit of experience before. I think where is the Brisbane guy? What's his name? Adam Reynolds. Like, didn't he play Origin once? I think we could make him make shift for them. I don't think that just because just because Nathan Cleary's not playing, I don't think we need to move Luai around at all. Like, so I think from that point of view, I don't get that part. If he is the best 5-8, he can play 5-8, and it doesn't matter who he's playing 5-8 with, I'd say that, Nicho is the guy that everybody's been talking about. I think it's time for him to get his shot, right? So I think that's definitely the number one front runner. And then look, if there's any further injuries, then you'd have to go with, Adam Reynolds looks like he's out as well for a bit, maybe the season, right? Okay, so Adam Reynolds is not an option. So I think we're going to get in real trouble when Adam Reynolds is actually injured, because then who do you have? Who's the next best top line? Maybe finally Luke Carey gets his chance. he's said that he's going to retire next year, but maybe he's the stopgap. The Roosters, they're sort of flying well, right? Maybe he's the guy. And then Chad Townsend, maybe. But the Cowboys aren't doing that well, are they? We are in seventh, really.
You've forgotten. Yeah, that's right. We are. You've forgotten someone, and my initial, earlier prediction that there would be the four horsemen of the Tigers apocalypse. Oh. We are forgetting. This is our opportunity to have a Brooks Moses combination. Why don't we see whether that's going to work for us? You never know. Like, we need a miracle. Why we have to go for Moses? And we have to go for Brooks. So I think poor old Nicho has to stay on the sideline. But I think you can guarantee that since Brad Fidler is not the coach, he'll get more than 1 minute or 2 minutes of game time. So he'll be used, but not maybe in the way we think. But look, in all seriousness, I think we're in huge trouble, and I think we need to really rethink it. But I wonder whether, Nicho and Luai, I think, possibly is a combination that we could go for. I think it's too risky to bring Mitchell Moses back. He hasn't really proven himself. Luai continues to sort of perform, do what he needs to do, and he's performed well at Origin level and I think better than Cleary in many circumstances. So I wonder whether, again, this is the problem. We tend to kind of have a one-sided, kind of simplistic, superficial way of selecting players based on what the media tells us. It seems like, you know, the media can sort of drive a player in or out of contention, and it's kind of not fair. And I think Luai, you know, he should be the incumbent regardless of whether Nathan Cleary is there. And I think maybe look to Nico as, you know, one of the front runners so far in the Dally M medals as well. So he's in form, his time is right. And I think his team as well has been led very well by him to be top of the table. I think all the signs point to at least Nico being there, possibly in my mind, supporting Luai. All right. That's tackle number four. Let's move on to some international news. Here we go, tackle number five. All right, some international news coming out of the US. Bernie Gurr, former Roosters and Eels CEO, has been appointed as treasurer of the USARL after the national governing body for the game in the United States finalized a raft of key board positions. Gurr and Sydney Roosters CEO Joe Kelly were last month appointed to the USARL board as independent directors following a lengthy governance reform process instigated by the International Rugby League. So the appointments are Matt Goshnik is the chair, Dustin Zera is a corporate secretary, and Bernie Gurr is the treasurer. Those are the key strategic appointments. A very good thing, I think, to get people of the caliber of Bernie Gurr, who are really good, smart operators. And as I was reading an article about this, it was interesting because I just only knew of him in his administrative kind of capacity as CEO of the Roosters from 94 to 2003, and then with the Parramatta Eels for four seasons from 2016 to 2019. But actually, he's also done other things in between and before that. He did actually play for the Roosters. He studied accounting while he was there. So that, you know, that's, again, you know, stay in school, kids, when you're an NRL player. You never know what could happen and what life can, you know, do for you. But he was also the accountant, would you believe, for Duran Duran's 1993 Australian tour before he entered sports administration as the finance director for the 1994 FIFA World Cup in the United States. I had no idea. So he was a pretty important role. And then it says, what else does it say in his history?
Well, he used to wake them up before they go-go so that they wouldn't live their life on a yo-yo.
That's Wham. That's not Duran Duran.
Oh, okay, right.
Oh, that's shocking. Anyway, look, that shows that your youth, you know, you're obviously more of a Taylor Swift generation than Wham. Look, very interesting. He's had a interesting sort of background. And like I said, I didn't realize he had a part to play in the FIFA World Cup of 1994. So, you know, absolutely amazing. But it's good to have people like him, I think, on board. I'm just having a look at the quote from the official USARL statement says the following. Bernie Gurr, former CEO of Sydney Roosters and Parramatta Eels, brings a wealth of experience in sports administration and finance management, crucial for the USARL strategic financial planning. And I think that's it in terms of, news items there. But I think, look, it's a good sign, I think, when you've got people of the caliber of Bernie Gurr that are putting their hand up to help out a developing rugby league nation. Tish, what are your thoughts on this? Are you going to claim to? Are you going to try and go over there and claim
this? Yeah,
yeah. You're going to try and help the effort to get America across the line in rugby league.
Yeah, well, look, whatever we can do to do it. I think earlier in the year we had those signings of maybe some NRLW talent that might be ready, or you know, will be ready quicker than maybe the men's to actually play. To play rugby league, in the competition in Australia, and I think also, hopefully, the news of going back to Vegas with an NRLW team is also on the cards. Because I actually feel that there is a bit of a gap because there is a WNBL. I don't know if there's a W baseball, but I don't think there's a WNFL, right? So in terms of a football code, you know, like you know, a tackling sport, shall we say, they have the American football there, which is, you know, very male dominated. I think it's very hard to crack through against that. But I think over on the women's side of things, in terms of at least participation and even getting a female sports star, you know, female sports rugby league star, it could be really good, you know, Good Morning America type news. Do you know what I mean? Like, hey, an American, you know, a former American college student won a, you know, scored a try in the NRLW game, you know, and they cross over to her or something. I think that could be big news, because I think right now, I think rugby league needs a profile in America. And I feel like, yeah, I think the quickest route to path is getting an American star playing in the NRL, and also doing these Vegas trips. So, yeah, I think, yeah, great stuff. And, you know, you've got somebody who's got, you know, a bit of an entertainment background, a bit of a sport administration background, played rugby league, obviously loves the sport. So, yeah, look, I think it's time for a change, and let's make America great again.
On that, let's go to tackle number six, the tips for the magic round. Here we go. All right, after round 10, I thought I was going well, but you ended up beating me 6 out of 8 versus me 5 out of 8. That takes you to a total of 45 so far, and you've just edged ahead, and I'm on 41. So I was catching up, but now you're edging back ahead. Let's move on to round 11, the magic round. This is all the games will be played at Suncorp Stadium. Same as usual, we'll have... 2 games on Friday, 3 games on Saturday, although we've now got 3 games on Sunday. So I think the Thursday night game gets moved, which is good.
Because there'll be an NRLW game on Thursday night this week, which is... It's State of Origin Women round one, yeah.
Right, of course, yes, yes. Also, that's right.
I think it's Suncorp, if I'm not wrong.
I think so. But in terms of the NRL's magic round, we've got some really interesting... lineups and clashes, and given that this is a kind of a touchy period where the Origin squads are going to be announced very soon, there'll be a lot of players that are starting to really pick up the pace now. So let's launch into this, and let's also consider the fact that this is Suncorp Stadium. So to the extent that you've got some teams that have strong kind of presence up there, or are well followed outside of Sydney in particular. Consider that, because the crowd will probably play a role in this as well. All days, I think, will be bumper crowds. And so consider that and what role that will play at Suncorp Stadium. So there you go. The first Friday night game at 6 p.m. is Raiders versus the Bulldogs. Look, based on what I've seen, I can't go past the Raiders. I think they are specials for this. What about you?
Yeah, look, I'm going to tip the Bulldogs. I think Raiders coming off a bye, and I think the Bulldogs have shown some great form, so Bulldogs for me.
Yeah, and let's not forget, straight after that, there's another game being played. So that's what else is going to happen is, you know, if you have back-to-back games, you're going to have a tearing up a little bit of the ground. The main, so Friday, 8 p.m., is Manly versus Brisbane. Look, it could go either way, but I'm actually tipping Manly for this one, because I think they look, DC will run rampant over the Broncos defense, I reckon.
Yep, look, I'm going to tip the Broncos. I think Friday night, Suncorp Stadium, going to be very hard. Don't know why this is Canada's away game, but there you go.
It is. Fair enough. Titans versus the Knights is the first of the Saturday games. It is a 3 p.m. game on Saturday. I'm tipping the Titans. I know that they've only just sort of beaten the Cowboys, and I know the Knights have kind of come off a good win as well, but I just get the feeling that the Titans are going to lift in their almost home crowd.
Yeah, I'll get to tip the Titans too. I think they've showed a lot of resiliency, and I think they'll continue to do that. Probably can't find the try line, but you know, I think that's probably where they will go for that one.
All right, Sharks just off their top of the table clash victory. are now going up against the juggernaut of the Sydney Roosters, who have absolutely torn in to many, many teams recently in recent weeks. I get the feeling that the Sharks will continue their winning ways with Nico back, potentially to showcase his wares and his argument for a Blues Origin squad spot. I think the Sharks will win this one.
Yeah, look, I'm going to tip the Roosters. I think it's very hard to beat to beat Melbourne and then Roosters back to back. So I think, I just think that it might be a task a bit beyond them right now.
All right, the Rabbitohs and the Cowboys both have been quite disappointing this year, but I think the Rabbitohs more so. And on that basis, I think the Cowboys, with their Queensland kind of home, sort of home ground advantage, will defeat the Rabbitohs.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think this could be a 41-40 game. We're going to give it to the Cowboys with a little bit more of an attacking edge.
All right. Warriors versus the Panthers. Now, at the risk of looking like a complete idiot, I'm tipping the Warriors to cause a boil over at the Sunday 1:50 p.m. game. And the reason for that is I think, I think they're doing some soul searching at the moment. I think the Panthers, having lost Cleary, is not going to bode well for them. I think they've got enough players that can either absolutely demolish the Warriors, or potentially with having a hostile Brisbane Broncos crowd after what they did to them in the grand final, they might find that they don't really have the support that they would hope for, whereas the Warriors would lift, I think, with the crowd and the support. So Warriors for mine.
Yeah, well, look, all the best for the, the commentators for this game, because I think both teams have quite a few hyphenated names in their lineup. So, look, I'm going to tip the Panthers. I think, just even without Cleary, I mean, they've had a... they've got Jack Cole playing and Luai and a halfback. So I think Luai's got a point to prove as well. And then up against Tamari Martin, who was a former Panther. So should be a good game. So you've got to remember Johnson's out as well. So Panthers for me on this one.
All right. Storm and the Eels is the first of the Sunday games. I think, look, based on what I've seen, I think the Storm, they're still up there and the Eels are not. So Storm are going to win this one quite easily.
Yeah, look, they're almost like the fifth franchise when they play at Suncorp, right? The Storm. So I think the Storm for mine on that one.
And finally, the Tigers and the Dolphins are playing each other. And the Dolphins, look, I think, again, from what I've seen, the Tigers may feel like their backs against the wall a little bit. So I don't really know how they're going to react and respond, but I think the Dolphins are riding high and they're just continuing to produce good performances, even if they don't win every game. So Dolphins for mine.
Yeah, look, I'm a Tiger supporter, but I don't see how they can win this game at all. So I'm just going to have to tip the Dolphins.
All right, and obviously the Dragons have the bye in Magic Round. And look, Tish, that's it. That wraps up our podcast for today. It's been a good one. Looking forward to Magic Round coming up. Hope you all are too. For those of you going out there in Suncorp Stadium, stay safe and have a great time. And for those of us, rest of us watching it on TV, back-to-back rugby league, what more could you ask for this weekend? It truly is magic. Over to you, Tish.
Well, thank you, Dr. Taylor. To thank everybody for listening. That's all the time that we have for this edition of the Rugby League Republic. We're your hosts, Tish and Dr. T. Join us next time on the Rugby League Republic. Bye for now.